This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Michael Bernstam at the Hoover Institution, my guide on the sanctions regime against the Russian Federation because of the predation in Ukraine and bad acting around the world. The sanctions regime has been under criticism most recently because it wasn't well coordinated. The sanctions from one entity do not match up with the sanctions from, say, the European Union or individual countries. So the G7 summit, the G7 meetings, intends to address this inconsistency. Meeting in Hiroshima, meeting in Japan, meeting since the winter of 2023. All of these things are coming together. Is it adequate? Is it enough? The part that I like best is they've decided to ban all exports, everything. And the only thing that won't be banned, we'll tell you about. It used to be the other way around. They would make a list of what is banned for exports. Now it's everything. Michael, a very good evening to you. It took them a while, but I think they've got the right idea. Do you agree with this, that banning all exports from Russia is going to be effective? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. There are lots of gaps and discrepancies, and they're trying to close the loopholes, and they're trying to deprive, most importantly, the Russian budget of export revenues, because about 50% of oil revenues are taxed. All other exports are taxed by the Russian government. And so the target now is the Russian budget, so that they cannot finance the war. In addition to banning exports, they are looking into nuclear reactors that Russia is exporting and nuclear material, which is more complicated because some countries need it. And they also ban transit through Russia because a lot of materials of dual use, of technological use, are going through Russia and stay in Russia instead of going to their final destination. So they want to control all sorts of gaps and loopholes.
And in controlling this, Canada is working on measures related to human rights. The U.S. and Japan are preparing their own packages. Canada is concerned about the abduction of Ukrainian children. It's second year of the war. Do we have an explanation for why they didn't work on this initially? Did they think it wouldn't last this long? Why? Because it's beginning to look like they know what they're talking about now.
Well, the most important news that comes to Russia in these days is that we indeed underestimated the effect of sanctions and the contraction of Russian GDP, because naively we counted the calendar year 2022. But the calendar year begins in January and the war started in the end of February. So now there are estimates which show the real year, the war year, from March 1, 2022 through February 28, 2023. And the real GDP contraction during this time is 3.1%, not 2.1%, because we mix together kind of good months and bad months. So really the impact is there, but it is slow because the initial sanctions expected to disrupt the supply chains, that we cut off Western imports, important inputs, and the Russian economy will sort of break up. This didn't happen because of globalization, because there are lots of substitutions. The substitutions came from China, or lots of clever countries bought Western goods and re-exported them to Russia. And so the Russians paid more, and so it went about 7.2% more expensive became in 2022, but the supply chains sustained. That was the big underestimate of the force of global markets.
You recall early on, Michael reported to us that in the sub-basement of the Russian Central Bank in Moscow, there was, at that time, my estimate, my memory, Michael, is $170 billion worth of gold. And the question was, could they move it? Could anybody sell it? Now, this story connects to this, and I love this story because this means Goldfinger is out there. The famous James Bond villain is busy. With Russian gold, writes Bloomberg, with Russian gold shut out of Western markets, little-known companies are stepping up in to help the country's bullion find new buyers. Russian gold shut out. Russian bars became taboo after the invasion of Ukraine and were blocked by a group of seven nations and the European Union. That created a big headache for Russia's huge gold industry. Michael, how have they solved it? Because Bloomberg is saying that JP Morgan and HSBC have backed out of handling this gold.
Okay, like economics is like nature, like natural sciences. There is no vacuum. The first law of thermodynamics, the same thing in the market. There are no gaps that will not be filled. There are no holes that will not be filled by clever enterprising people and by clever enterprising countries. So when the big players like Rotterdam and JP Morgan and major British companies, because of the sanctions, left the market, immediately Dubai, United Arab Emirates, became the hub, the center of this trade, and the Russians are selling gold and they're buying real estate in Dubai. And so the Russian officials, the corrupt officials, are now buying this real estate in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, and they're selling gold. The amounts do not seem to be small compared with oil or natural gas or metals or nuclear materials. It's, we're talking about $1.5 billion a year, but that's enough to fill some margins. And so there's some good news aspect to it. You mentioned James Bond, and I am thinking about Nazi Germany, when after the war was lost, lots of Nazis went to Argentina and they were poor. So now lots of Russians are preparing for themselves some kind of escape place in Dubai, buying real estate. If you open a Russian business newspaper, a Russian business website, you see somehow luxury apartments, commercials for selling them in Dubai. So Dubai has become a major, major hub for selling Russian gold.
So they take a bar of gold, they give it to someone in Dubai, and they get an apartment over a sandy island. Is that and that will have value beyond the war in Ukraine?
Well, absolutely, because this shows that some people are seriously thinking about what will happen thereafter when there is a regime change. So they're hedging. They stay in Russia, but they're hedging. And another thing is, it's a kind of funny detail, that now they want several countries like Pakistan and Bangladesh and a few others who are buying Russian oil and don't have American dollars and don't have euros. The Russians are saying, okay, you pay in dirham. Dirham is the currency of the United Arab Emirates. What will they do with it? Oh, they will buy real estate, nothing else.
Michael, the last story, we just have a minute. Milestone of buying yuan soon as sanctions oil cap hit eases. The story says that Russia is now buying foreign currency. Why? We have a minute.
Well, because they have surplus with selling oil with China, and as the Chinese are paying more in renminbi than the Russians are buying, and the Chinese imports, and therefore they have left assets, and these assets are very useful for providing liquidity for Russian banks. Russian banks are using it as a collateral when they need to swap money with the central bank, so it is a smoothing. It's a very useful for them to buy small amounts. We're talking $200 million worth of renminbi Chinese currency, but it is useful for sustaining their banking system.
So it is a sign of weakness or strength that they're buying foreign currency?
Well, it is clever. It is a sign of that they're concerned about the bailouts and about the stability of their banking system. They don't want their banks to collapse.
Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution reporting on one, the G7 is getting coordinated about sanctions. No more exports unless we give you an exemption. And the Goldfinger story goes to Dubai. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.